Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show on the Blog Talk Radio Network, sponsored by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Bill Murray. I'll be your host this evening. I'm coming to you live from Southeast Florida tonight, and I am a survivor of child abuse. Tonight is one of our call-in discussion shows where we hope that people who are listening to the broadcast will call in with comments and questions, and they're meant to be directed to the person that's hosting, myself, tonight. I am one of what we call the hyphenates in the NASCA organization. Hyphenates appear on Tuesdays and Thursdays on a rotating basis with a different hyphenate, which means a survivor and a professional of some capacity, for each of the first Tuesday and the second Tuesday and the third Tuesday and so forth. Tonight is the fifth Tuesday, which happens sometimes during a month. A fifth Tuesday or a fifth Thursday is when I fill in, and I come in as the founder of NASCA, which would be my professional background, I suppose. And I am, of course, a long-term survivor of trauma from childhood. My trauma was based on being sexually abused by clerics. My recovery spans some 3.5 decades now, more than that. I was sexually abused by numerous clerics, all men, between the ages of 11 and about midway through high school, which was a minor seminary. I was also the victim of prepubescent pornography and even a 2-week kidnapping, 2.5 weeks. But I was graced to have found Alcoholics Anonymous when I was about 30 years old. I'm 67 now. The program not only helped me get clean and sober, but I also found a place where I could give up my secrets and found the tools by which I've recovered. The same process that's used by many 12-step programs can be used by a survivor, which I have done, to create a new life designed for living that really does work. And I'm very grateful to the 12-step programs for doing this. Now, I have a sample 12-step program that's rewritten to accommodate the needs of a survivor community, and it is linked in the description of tonight's show. It says it's 12-step based. The website, I'll give you the web address verbally, is ASCA, standing for Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, ASCA12step.org. And, of course, 12 is a number. ASCA12step.org, with ASCA12step being all one word. That'll take you to a website that we may use tonight, I don't know, to explain, how I used the same 12 steps that I had learned in Alcoholics Anonymous and other programs, but converted them to have meaning for those of us who wanted to use the same design for living to adjust our lives so that we would recover from child abuse and its traumas. So that's going to be the basis of tonight's show. As I get started, I want to welcome to the show my co-host tonight, Bailey from Florida. She's really just a few miles away in the next town up the coast. Deerfield Beach, and I'm in Pompano Beach. So, Bailey, I really appreciate your being here tonight, and thanks for calling in.
Well, hello, Bill. Good evening. And thank you for having me co-host and trail you. I always enjoy it. I always learn something, new from you. So I see we have a caller, and I'm not sure who that is.
It's all one, so it could be anybody. Sometimes when people call in and they use Skype, that happens, and sometimes other things. It's all one, so we don't know who this person is. But I'll tell you what, let me just open the mic and ask. How's that?
Okay.
That's easy enough.
Awesome.
Hi, this is Bill. Your number's listed by all one, so who is this and where are you from?
Bill, it's Steve McNally. You know where I'm from.
Hello, Steve. Steve is from New Jersey.
How are you?
Hi.
Yes.
I'm very well. Thank you very much. All right.
Oh, yeah.
So we have our first caller.
Forgot to unblock my number. There's a block on there.
I got it. Don't worry about it. You're all okay now. Steve McNally has been in and around the NASCA organization for many years. We don't hear from him too often anymore, but we're always delighted to see you, Steve. So thank you for joining us. As I said, to get on with the description of tonight's show, the program that I found in Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 30, I've now been using for, I guess it's 37 years. So I've been consistently clean and sober that long, but I've also been using it because I found in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and with my sponsor and so forth, I found people who didn't turn me away when I actually talked about my childhood trauma. Now, that was happening. I was seeking places that I could even talk about it, and nobody back then even believed little boys could be sexually abused, frankly. So thank God that I fell in with AA, and as I say, I believe that anybody, since I did it, can use the same 12-step program, obviously changed slightly with the wording, away from the word alcohol to the word childhood abuse, and use it as a tool that they can use for recovery. Now, there's lots of tools. The psychiatry that's available, the psychology, the counselors, the therapists, the life coaches, all are places where you can find individuals that can help you if they're trauma informed, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But secondly, there are also other places where you can find groups. NASCA itself is an example of a group. We don't promote any particular style of recovery. I'm here talking tonight about my style of recovery, but there are people in NASCA from every walk of life, and we have no problem with people deciding to attend to see a life coach on a regular basis or whatever it is. And then there are many tools. There's EMDR, and there's hypnosis, and there's meditation, and there's journaling, and there's many other groups that have sprung up, although it's difficult to meet these days in a group setting. We find that, and we do it too, that it is fine to have a group in an online world like Zoom, which is the one we use, and of course this radio show, which is an internet-based radio show. So there are ways to engage with people. We have giant Facebook groups. We have a LinkedIn group. We have other social media like Twitter and Instagram and so forth. And all of these together are tools that people may or may not choose to use. For example, we have a newsletter, and about 950 people get the newsletter. And that doesn't change. It's very rare that we lose or gain more than one or two people each month we put out the newsletter. So, but it's optional. We have many thousands of members, and maybe they haven't found the newsletter or don't care for it. That's fine. But it's free, as is everything we do at NASCA. And so we encourage people to check out everything we offer. Don't be afraid that you're going to be forced to do anything. Nobody's ever forced at NASCA to do anything. We do even recognize that there are some who wish to have an anonymity, and in order to accommodate that, we have many protections, such as using a screen name or using a single name like Bill M, you know, or just Bill. It doesn't matter to us. And so there's lots of ways we do this. In fact, you can join these groups and not say anything. We don't require that even. So you can call in on tonight's show and simply listen. The number to dial if you desire to do that is 646-595-2118. 646-595-2118. If you come on the show through your phone, we may ask your name, as I did with Steve, if we don't recognize it, but you're free to say, oh, I'm here just to listen tonight, and that's fine. You can also listen, of course, on your computer. We know a lot of people are doing that right now. All right, let's get started with this. I do have a bit of a plan. I hope we can let me start the show with this plan, and we'll see where it goes. Is that okay with you guys, or did you bring an issue that you wanted to address?
It's fine. I was going to ask you, this is Bailey, by the way. Welcome, Steve. I was just going to ask, and you can talk about this later, how you used the 12 steps to help you with your child abuse, or did you just use it to help you with your addiction? And you could talk about that.
Oh, no.
Yep.
No. Obviously I did stay clean and sober by following the 12 steps that you'd find in, let's say, Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous and so forth. I did. But in addition to that, I used the same 12 steps as the big book, which is the basic text for Alcoholics Anonymous, describes the process. The 12 steps are the process by which a person gets sober as a design for living. And what they mean by design for living is that it's kind of a way of straightening out your life, kind of cleaning it up, and then staying clean. And it can be related, as you know, to things like overeating or being an adult survivor of an alcoholic, or having a gambling addiction. This is why the same 12 steps have been borrowed by so many other 12-step groups. And indeed, I have set up a 12-step group, as I said, at asca12step.org. We can refer to that as the basis for explaining how I've done it, because it is kind of how I envisioned using the steps, replacing the word alcohol with the phrases that would be appropriate for us, such as childhood assault or abuse, and instead of getting rid of our alcoholism, we get rid of the trauma of our youth, something like that. And you'll see as we read through the steps, if we wish, how I've done it. All right, I know Steve has some familiarity with this process as well, so let me just get started. And I have to say that I had planned, as of last night, I was thinking about what I wanted to talk about tonight, and I was tossing and turning in bed, and I have to be honest, I did not have a good night's sleep. I had a horrible sleep. I slept for 2 hours, and then I was up for 2 hours. Then I slept for an hour, and then I was up for 2 hours, you know, like that, all night long.
Me
then
too.
I had a very heavy day. Yeah, then I had a very heavy day. I had a meeting this morning about a public service announcement project that NASCA is involved in. That was a telephonic meeting. Then I had the Zoom meeting that we do at 2 o'clock for 2 hours. And then we're doing this tonight. So I knew I had a kind of a heavy day coming into today. When I was tossing and turning last night, one of the things I was thinking about doing is discussing my journey as it relates to really, it's all in the first step when it starts. And by the way, the 12 steps are written in a specific order. It's my belief that the process of recovering, whether it's from alcoholism, gambling, or child abuse, should be done in order. and should be done with care and not zipped through. Oh, I've done that now. No. This takes a long time, a lot of energy, actually tremendous courage, and some actual work to get to a place where you have kind of a meaningful quality of life that I would call the journey of recovery, the healing journey. But the first step is the first step. And really, when I have a problem in my life, which I had yesterday and I had today again, it's generally speaking a problem with the first step. And here's what I mean by that. I suffer from all the character defects and shortcomings there are. I suffer from all seven deadly sins. I'm filled with foibles and a quote sinner unquote, if you want. I'm not a perfect person. And even after all this time, I'm still not a perfect person. But I do know, having done this long enough, that when I have a problem with anger, which I had both yesterday and today, it has something to do with my trying to be in control. And that's what the first step is about. I'll read you the first step as I have rewritten it for adult survivors of child abuse. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over the abuse and trauma of our youth, that our lives had become unmanageable. Now, when I was actually saying that to myself as I was getting clean and sober, I was actually saying, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and every other person, place, thing, and situation in our life, and our lives had become unmanageable, comma, according to the way we insist it has to come out, something like that. So I hadn't honed it down to create an actual 12 steps, which I have done now, and I've had this around for several years. But it's all about powerlessness. And I suffer from the delusion that somehow I can control and manage the way I want things to go. And I simply can't. So the first step is where I go back to over and over and over when I am taking back, control, when I'm insisting that things have to go my way before I'm happy. It's not true. In fact, I usually see what the result of what occurs after the actions I take sometimes weeks later. I don't see them right away. The benefits come down the road. And this is why we try to encourage people in a 12-step program and at NASCA too to stay in the moment. Not to proceed too far ahead with your thinking, nor too far back with your thinking. Stay in the moment, because it's in this present moment that we might be able to do something beneficial to ourselves, and hopefully, since we know people are listening, that would benefit, say, the newcomer. And that's my goal, is to continue to grow myself, but also to help others to recover from their childhood trauma and abuse. So this first step is where I go back to. And I tell you, for example, I said, I own all the sins there are and all the shortcomings. And, the one I was thinking about mostly was pride. I am a prideful person. And I can't help that. I have the sin of pride in me. And I try to be humble. But I don't know the difference between being proud of something, genuinely proud of something, and being or having false humility. I really don't know that. I don't know how to measure that. As best I can, I have tried to present, for example, with NASCA, a product that I truly believe can help thousands and thousands of people, and I've seen it do that. And obviously, I'm the founder, so I'm always going to be considered at least a leader here, or a spokesperson perhaps. But frankly, ever since I began NASCA, I've been trying to replace myself, because I really believe that NASCA is not Bill's effort. It's all of our effort. It's a communal effort that everybody owns and everybody should feel proud to be a participant in. And yet I slip back into controlling a situation because it's not going exactly how I'd envisioned it, for example. So I get angry. that's my response to things not going exactly the way I want it, or a lack of control, if you want to say it that way. So, you know, I have all the deadly sins and all the shortcomings and defects that there are. And what I try to do in my recovery is to accept the fact that I am fallible, obviously very fallible, but I ask God to remove those shortcomings that are in the way of my being effective. Not all of them, but in the way of my doing, you know, the work. And I consider it not my work, but God's work, you know, promoting the issue of child abuse, which is half of our mission, and secondly, offering help and healing to anybody I can. And I have a lot of experience in both these areas. I tend to get impatient with folks who come in and they correct me, they fix things, they don't want to do it that way and so forth. I understand that's going to happen. But it's my problem that I am upset by that. I tried to explain this today earlier to somebody that, you know, when I'm triggered by something, which is what anger comes out of that usually, I can't really blame the person that has done whatever it is that's triggered me. I have to blame Bill, because it's something in me, a reaction to something else somebody else may have done, certainly, but it's not their fault. It's Bill who gets triggered, and Bill who gets angry, and Bill who has to, you know, take a breath, step back, not try to be in charge, let it go. All these notions that that have to do with step one, the lack of control that we all have, the lack of power that we all have, and the lack of manageability in terms of insisting that things have to come out a certain way. Because I don't know what's right and wrong. I believe God does. I know that some of the processes that I've used have been wrong, but an awful lot of them have been right and in the right direction. And by the way, I didn't come up with them. They were taught to me by, I don't know how many people were involved in my recovery until I got here. But let's say tens of thousands of people contributed, even if they shared once and I heard something useful. All right, I'm going to pause there because we have Kathy from California with us too, and I do want to acknowledge her and get her on the line. Kathy, we really appreciate your calling in this evening, and I'm glad you're here.
I'm absolutely happy to be here, and thank you for sharing your story and how you have helped heal. I, too, went through a 12-step program for families of alcoholics, so I'm very familiar with the program, and it was extremely, extremely helpful. One of the best things I ever did.
Right. Now, as I say, there are a lot of 12-step programs, and indeed, there are a lot of people who are in recovery in various other systems, for example, from childhood trauma, but do have also a 12-step background. So they'll understand to some degree what I'm talking about. I never went to, I mean, I have attended an occasional, you know, workshop here and seen a counselor there and so, but I've never gone through therapy. I've never had a traditional relationship with any long-term life coach, counselor, therapist, psychologist, nothing. It's all been through the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, frankly, because I found they were willing to let me share some of my story and didn't chase me away. And that's the first thing. Pieces of my story, 3 and 5 minutes at a time, and then eventually when it came time to tell my story, I always concluded the child abuse from the podium or from the sharing, because as one of the leaders of the group told me, you know, we can see how this was had a very good reason to drink so poorly or drink so heavily, you know, right away. You had this horrible stuff that had been going on with you for years and years, and you couldn't do anything else about it. So you drank. So it's part of my drinking story. It's the reason, you know, that I drank alcoholically, let's say, right from the get-go. I found something that was a solution that temporarily worked, and then it became a problem in itself. But even even when it temporarily worked, it did not, it only worked on the symptoms, not on the root. And my belief is that by following a 12-step program, you can work on the root. All right. And as I said, the first step is the control, the giving up, the admission of trying to be in control, trying to be pretending I'm powerful, the misguidedness that I can manage anything at all, any person, place, thing, or situation. I can't. I can't even control Bill. So if I can't control Bill, how can I control Kathy or Bailey?
That's right.
And to Now to continue the thought, and I did ask people to take a look at the website that I put up. I don't know if you heard that, Kathy, but ASCA12step.org. It's linked in the description of tonight's show where it says Bill's recovery is 12-step based. If you click on that, it'll open up. And this is a website where I tried to describe, I think feebly, but I tried to describe in simple terms what I have done with my recovery by using a 12-step process. And you'll see a link right on the front page there that says the 12-step program. When you click on that, the 12 steps are there. So I have read only step one so far, but I do want to go forward from we admitted we were powerless over the abuse and trauma of our youth, that our lives have become unmanageable, step one, into step two, which is having admitted that, coming to believe in a power greater than ourselves that could restore us to sanity. Now, the description of a power greater than ourselves for a lot of people is also described as God, but they wrote it this way because they came to understand that there are many concepts of spirituality in God. And so, Alcoholics Anonymous does not require you to follow any particular spiritual path. It does recommend a spiritual path, but it doesn't say what it has to be. So it doesn't matter if you're a Jew, if you're a Gentile, if you're a Muslim, if you're a if you're a Zen Buddhist. It does help a great deal, though. And frankly, you can do these programs being an agnostic or an atheist, absolutely, because for some people, the power greater than ourselves ends up being the dynamic of the entire group, where the entire group obviously has a combined knowledge and experience beyond mine. So if I come to believe that a power greater than myself, maybe that's the group, can restore me to sanity, that actually satisfies step two. But the people that wrote this knew that there would be some resistance to using the word God. In fact, the third step, I'll go ahead and read that and then pause, is made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. And that's in italics in the big book. The reason that it's in italics is because after they wrote the big book and they passed it around to the first 100 members, the first 100 members recommended that we put the phrase as we understood him in there so as not to scare people away. Because it can be, as I said, any God you understand or any spirituality you understand. So in step one, we admit powerlessness. In step two, we come to believe in a power greater than ourselves. And in step three, we make a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. And essentially, that's the first three steps, the basis of the rest of what's to come. As I said earlier in the show, and I'll repeat to Kathy, she knows this probably, but I do recommend that these steps are done in order and that there's no rush to do any particular step. Obviously, tonight I'm trying to explain multiple steps within a 90-minute boundary, but the first step can take months or years for some people to really get it. You know, we have to give up our power, and nobody's anxious to do that. For the most part, our brains, I'll tell you, our traumatized brains want us to be in control. We change our own behavior so that we can have a modicum of control, so that we can present ourselves to the world, even though it's a lie, as one person, and then we know inside of ourselves we're another. That's just a little example of my being in control being harmful to me. in terms of child abuse and the trauma from it. I'm going to pause for a second and make sure Bailey and Kathy are understanding me. I don't want to get too far ahead here in case there's some questions or comments, too, on these first three steps. Either one of you ladies? By the way, Steve McNally left us, so it's just the three of us here. Myself, Bailey, and Kathy.
This is Bailey. I haven't really looked at the 12 steps in a long time. I know that we used them when I was in domestic violence group. We used it, I guess, in the format that matched the domestic violence. I've also been to Al-Anon group, and they use it, and I guess it's in a little bit of a different format because it's family members of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Right.
So I do understand that what you were saying, how they change it to fit more or less, they'll change it that much, but more or less to fit each kind of group or whatever that you're in. But I really need to look them over again. I have not in a while, so I'm just listening.
Okay, not a problem at all. All that needs to be changed in order to use it for another situation is a few words. It's exactly the same. In fact, steps 2 and 3 are identical to every other 12-step group. And the only thing I've changed is instead of the word alcohol, I put childhood abuse. So the issue that you want the group to face, replace it is in appropriate places, the word for, say, alcohol, alcoholism, and so forth. So you could read the first step as, we admitted we were powerless over domestic violence and our lives had become unmanageable. And that'd be fine if that's the reason that your group was meeting. Kathy, you understand what I'm saying, I'm sure?
Absolutely. My 12-step program was actually run through a church that I attend.
Uh-huh.
And I had kind of fallen away from God for many years because of all of my experiences and bad experiences and all of that. But I think that it's imperative that you understand that we're human and we really do not have control, as much control as we think we do or that we would like to have. And for me, all of the 12 steps, once I went through everything, but especially the first three, were spiritual in nature, and it's kind of become a part of my life, my everyday life. It's almost like the 12 steps become automatic once you learn them, once you learn how to be able to apply whatever your spiritual connection is. For me, it's God, but other people have other higher powers that they want to use. But for me, I'll just use the word God. But once I was really able to make that connection and to feel that connection and understand that connection better, it almost just became a part of me to where a lot of the other steps fell into place a lot easier once I was able to get through those three steps and make them apply. So I totally understand where you're coming from. And yes, I did not need a whole lot of counseling myself either. The two types of counseling I went through was the 12 steps to handle the childhood trauma and abuse that I experienced both in my biological family and in foster care. And the second was a counselor for a few week period of time to deal with my mother's mental illness and learn how to handle that through her. Those two things are what kept me out of a mental institution and kept me sane, to be honest with you.
That's right.
And I don't know where I would be if I had not gone through that 12-step program. I honestly don't know, but I knew I needed it, And that's why I chose to go to it. I had to make that choice. You have to make that choice that you know whatever you're trying to do isn't working. And it wasn't working for me. What everything I was trying to do to fix myself, because I knew that that was a factor in my behavior and in how I was living my life. And I didn't understand all the trauma-informed care that people have now and all this stuff. All I know is I needed help, and I went, and my husband went with me because he needed to understand as well. And it was the best decision I ever made in my life, and I'm so glad I did it.
Yeah. No, same thing for me. I mean, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous really broken with no relationship with a higher power. I had been brought up so Catholic that when it was priests and brothers that were my abusers, I couldn't believe God had let me down like that. And I walked away from the church. I walked away from, you know, my own thoughts about becoming a priest myself. I was in a minor seminary my high school years. I lived with about 250 priests and brothers in a monastery. So I was really curious, the point being. But I gave it up because I was so pissed. I was shaking my fist at God. Are you kidding me? How could you have done this to me? Now, I've since made amends for that. I've repaired my relationship with God of my understanding. I have a very rich spiritual program. And the problem is that I don't maintain it as well as I should. And I truly believe, and maybe we'll get into this later on, I don't know how far we'll get into the steps, but there is a place in the steps where you have made amends for your past, and you offer yourself to God basically kit and caboodle, meaning good and bad. But you ask God to remove from you every single defect of character that stands in the way of your usefulness to him or to others. You don't ask to be made perfect. You only ask for your shortcomings and character defects to be lifted, even temporarily lifted, so that you can be effective in working with others or representing your higher power. That's it. But do I do that every day? No. And when I don't do that every day, I am setting myself up for believing myself to be a higher power, which is really what step one is. Are you the higher power in your life? I don't think so. There's a ton of things I am not capable of doing that I wish I could do, but I believe again, that my higher power can do them and handle my life way better than me. So I give up trying to manage and control Bill's life the way Bill wants, and that's where my problems come up again. It's the suffering from the fantasy. Somehow I've regained the power, and I don't. I don't regain the power. I got to consistently give it up. Got to consistently remember I have a relationship with a higher power. Got to consistently make amends for the things that I've done, even today. And then I've got to go out in the world and share what I've found, you know, in the end. All right, we have Mary Ellen from New York State joining us too. I don't know if she's heard very much of the show, but I would like to welcome her to the panel and say we really appreciate you being here, Mary Ellen.
Thank you. Sorry I'm late. I just caught the last minutes, so I'll be paying attention and see what I can learn, okay?
Of course. Thank you very much for being here. We are discussing how my recovery, personal recovery, is based on a 12-step program, completely based on a program of 12 steps. But okay, as I, in my mind, applied it to child abuse and trauma and its recovery. So I did set up a website. It's in the description of tonight's show where it says Bill's recovery is 12-step based. When you click on that link, you go to ASCA12step.org, and I am taking us through the 12 steps slowly. We've covered the first three steps, and we're not finished. But we'll have some discussion here. So, okay?
Excellent. All right. Thank you.
ASCA12step.org for anyone that's listening, and you can be able to follow along. Kathy has told me that she has considerable experience with 12-step work, and she understands this fairly well. Bailey, on the other hand, is relatively new to 12-step work, which is great. I know a lot of people are. Nothing wrong with that. And I'm not saying this is the be-all and end-all either. It's just one possible method that can be used. And by the way, 12-step programs are free. You know, it amazes me how many people have come into the group and at one time or another, I can't afford therapy. I can't do it. I don't have a job. Right? I was so beat up. And thank God I was. I was so beat up when I finally took AA seriously at 30 years old that I was willing to do whatever. I was willing to actually listen at meetings, not just sit there and fidget and look at people across the room and so forth, but actually listen, read the literature, get a sponsor, do all the serious stuff that you have to do at first, I believe, in order to be effective with a 12-step program. It doesn't just happen to you because you read the book. It's action.
Right.
All of this is action. Right?
That's right.
Who's saying right?
Right.
Kathy?
That's what Ellen saying. Yeah. Lots of hard work.
It is a lot of hard work.
This is Bailey. I was just looking up the 12-step. It's funny because somebody on the page said, do you need help? Yeah, chat came up.
No, I'm fine.
No, that's what it said. Do you need help? I'm looking at this, and what happens if you don't believe in a higher power?
You're free to think of higher power in any way you want. The words higher power could be the group itself. In other words, there's more knowledge in the group than there is in me as an individual, especially when I'm new.
Okay.
So if I choose to, I can call the group experience here at NASCA. We have how many thousands of people, right? It's obvious to me that among the many thousands, there's more knowledge out there than there is in little old single Bill, right? So that could be my higher power. Or it could be any spiritual path I want to take. Or it could be none. It's not even required. If you can give up the concept of you being your own God, that's really what's required. That's step one. Because we, again, suffer from the delusion in step one that somehow we're powerful enough to handle ourselves, and we're not. That's a fantasy, a delusion. So that's why step one's the first step. It's at the beginning. You know, without that, I couldn't get to a step two, which is what you're asking about, much less a step three, where I turn my will and my life over to the care of that higher power. And by the way, they sometimes use power greater than ourselves. They sometimes use God. In the big book, they'll use the word father or creator. Great spirit, I've seen it used. Some religions have matriarchal gods like American Indian religions do, indigenous religions do. No problem. Whatever you're comfortable with as a power greater than yourself, that's your spiritual source, right? I did come from the Judeo-Christian tradition, very soundly so, and was raised a Roman Catholic, but also I know the Bible very well. I know the Jewish, traditions very well. I grew up in New York, so I also know the cultural traditions of Judaism, and I have no problem with any of that. None. Nor do I. I'll be honest with you, I have no problem with what I know of Islam. Now, I say quickly that I wish I knew more. I don't know it as well as I'd like to, but I do believe that Islam, correctly expressed, correctly used, is a valid spiritual path. I'm not talking about the terrorists, obviously, but same thing is true of other groups like not just Muslims, but let's say Hindus from India. I don't know Hinduism, I don't know Sikhism very well, but the little bit that I've been introduced to it, I honor it. And it's just not part of my path, but if it's part of your path, good deal. That's what I say.
Some people use nature. Some people just use nature or the wind
or
the sun or, you know, like look at the, you know, the Indians and the Greeks and all of them had their sun gods and had their whatever, you know, whatever is outside of yourself, I think, from a spiritual nature. Because we are made up. We have our heart, our mind, our soul, our body, you know, and so our if you want to use it as a consciousness or something, but it's with from without yourself, because if you think you can do this, it's a you can't do this on your own. You need something, your higher power, some higher power to help you get through these steps. Because I know that I tried so hard on my own because I abandoned my higher power, because I kind of blamed my higher power for a lot of things too, in a sense. But I couldn't do it on my own. I tried. I tried on my own, and I could not do it. So I realized I had to get into something or get some sort of help, where and the 12-step program provided that for me. So whatever you want to call your higher power is what the big book says you can do. Just whatever you want to consider it.
It can be Mother Earth, you know. It can be the spirit of the universe. It can be the power of nature. It can be anything, you know, as long as it's bigger than you, more powerful than you. So I don't
That's
really
That's what
recommend.
I like about the 12-step program, because it is open to everybody. That's what I love about it. It's for everybody. Everybody is welcome. Everybody is a very inclusive organization. And the only thing I don't like is just everybody thinks if you mention 12 steps, it's just for alcoholics. It's not. It's for people who've been traumatized as children that were abused. They have programs for that, like the ASCAA. And so, you know, I just wish that there was more information about that, so it's not just directly everybody automatically thinks of alcoholics, you know. But they have, in my case, it was for families of alcoholics. My father was an alcoholic.
Right.
I wasn't the alcoholic, but he was. And for me to go through a program that helped me understand him better, it also helped me understand me better. So I think
it
would be beneficial for them to really let people really make it more nationwide understood that this is for people who need to heal from childhood trauma too.
Well, I'm one guy, you know, but I decided when I set up NASCA that I wanted to go even further than that and say that it didn't matter to us, that we don't have a set methodology that a person, quote, has to follow, unquote,
right.
at NASCA. So anything is valid for us in terms of a journey of recovery. But among them are this 12-step method. And by the way, although we're not a 12-step group, we do follow, this is another show, but we do follow the 12 traditions. And you'll find them on the front page of our website. That's for the organization, not for the individual. But the 12 traditions are the spiritual guidelines by which NASCA is run, and overtly so, because I've never found a better way to run an organization. So I went ahead and used that. We don't require any kind of particular kind of recovery. And as covered earlier, you know, everything from psychiatry to ministry to life coaches and on and on and on, and all the tools. We recommend them all. We try to explain them well enough so that a person can choose what they think is their best path for now and get started, because that's what you got to do. You got to get started, you know. There's no time to waste, frankly. All right. Let me just backtrack very slightly and say that another thing that's plain in Alcoholics Anonymous and in other 12-step programs is you're allowed to create a power of your understanding. That's what it says in the third step, the God as we understood him. And that's really defined by meaning that you don't have to follow anybody else's higher power. So in my way of thinking, I kind of gave up the restraints I felt of having to believe in the Catholic God or the Jewish God, Yahweh, you know, God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Ghost. They're all spiritually relevant, absolutely. But for me in early recovery, I couldn't turn to them because I'd been so damaged by the church. So I created a power greater than myself that I was comfortable with. And it still really is that way today. It's not any higher power than anybody else has. But I instead simply assigned all the qualities that I would like to have God have, but in an infinite to an infinite degree. So I wanted a God that was patient. So that's one of the qualities. But I didn't stop there. I said infinitely patient, beyond my ability to understand. You know, I said I wanted a higher power that was compassionate and forgiving, but not compassionate and forgiving in a limited way. To the degree that you know, an infinite degree that I'll never understand. And in short, I created a higher power that I don't understand. Because it's reasonable to me that if God, and this is not original to me, none of what I'm sharing tonight is, almost nothing, or ever share is original to Bill. It's something I pass on that I've heard other people say. The one group thing I have heard is that if God was big enough for me to define, God wouldn't be big enough to handle my problems. So I don't try to define God. I believe there is a omnipotent, but also gentle. I wanted a gentle higher power. I said, I need a gentle higher power, but one that's infinitely gentle. And that's been true. You know, all those qualities to the infinite degree in a way I'll never understand it. So I really have a God as I don't understand him, because I don't pretend to understand God. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
That's just my personal.
If we only use one-tenth of our brain, as some people say, how can we possibly understand God?
Yeah. Well, it's not been done in millennia, many millennia, going back, you know, 20,000 years. It's been struggled over who is God, and I'm no greater than anybody, believe me. So what do I know? I just believe there is a God, and it's a God that I don't understand. I don't need to understand. All I need to believe is that God understands me. Go ahead, Bailey.
Yep.
So what I have learned during my healing, my recovery, because I went through my – I grew up in a home where faith was, there was no option. I mean, you believed. And my parents were extremely spiritual. So when I went through my horrific time, I was very angry at God. And then I felt guilty because I needed God, especially when my middle son got cancer. And I said, you didn't do enough to me and to them. They didn't witness enough abuse. You have to give my child cancer and make my kid sick. I was so angry. And it was something that I've dealt with the last, going on almost 5 years, back and forth. And I still pray and do. I go through the motions. And I've spoken to, besides my rabbi, but other speakers that talk about different things, and they said, if you didn't believe in God, how could you be angry at him? So I really, really loved hearing that, because if you don't have somebody that's bigger than you to go to and pray to or however, whatever people do, you crawl up, like I always say, you crawl up in a ball and you just can't, you like want to die. So in my, for me, I had to believe in something. I have to continue believing that he's there, that this is happening for a reason, and I'll find out one day why. But recently I had asked this question about being angry at God and how what kind of Jewish person am I, religious person am I, to be angry at God? So who's given me as much as he's taken, he's given. So when I was told being angry at God is a good thing because it means you believe. So that was just my thought on all of that.
Okay, that's great. So we all come from different backgrounds. Mine absolutely was extremely religious, just like yours. I mean, we went to Mass. I had to serve morning Mass, so I had to get on my bike and ride down to the local church and be on the altar with the priest for the 5:30 Mass over and over and over and all that stuff. So I didn't want a vengeful God, though, and I didn't want a God that was angry, and I didn't want a God that was keeping score, and I didn't want a God that was judgmental. So I gave it all up. See, I don't believe God is about vengeance. I believe he's about love. And instead of being vengeful, he's about infinite love, beyond my ability to understand it, love. And I don't believe he keeps score. I think he allows us free will. And in our free will, we're the offenders. We're the sinners. I started the show by talking about my problem that I experienced in the last couple of days with becoming angry, which is simply, you know what it is? It's a reaction to fear. When I start to feel like I'm not in control, step one, I get afraid, and it comes out as anger. But I don't have an angry God. Bill has the ability to be angry, but God is, again, completely understanding and forgives. In the instant before I ask his forgiveness, I'm forgiven. That's how I believe, and infinitely forgiven. So there's no tally going on. I no longer fear heaven, hell, and purgatory as the only options. I live heaven on earth today, and I have no reason to believe it won't continue in the afterlife, but I focus on today. And I try to stay in gratitude for what I have because God has been good to me. You can't have a higher power that's not good to you and survive 37 years. I mean, that's amazing to me. I can't believe it's happened, but here I am. And I believe God is completely compassionate, you know, not vengeful and not a scorekeeper. So I gave that up. And, you know, that's an option for someone to do. You can create a power that you don't understand, but that you're comfortable with, as long as it's bigger than you. So that was part of my second step. Coming to believe in a power greater than myself that could restore me to sanity. And insanity was insisting there wasn't God and going right along and doing all the behavior that Bill was doing and getting the same results over and same bad results over and over again. And again, what I was taught in AA is that you have to change your behavior in order to change the possibility of the results. So it's an action program. And if you can, at least temporarily, not suffer from the bait of, you know, lack of control causing anger and then fear and then anger, that's, you know, that's a fallacy I've covered for years and years and years, but I slip right back into it again because I'm human and I have every character defect and shortcoming there is. It's just that I try not to practice in them over and over all the time. Okay? Mary Ellen, did I
believe
make
in the same
state?
God you do. I believe God is love. I believe that he's compassionate and forgiving. And I don't believe that people should be trying to hate people to God. The judgmentalism is a little bit much for me to handle. I actually, if I could just quickly tell my story very quickly, that I believe because my mother told me when I was 12 that she was going to abort me with a pencil. And on that day that she contemplated aborting me, a believing woman came to her and talked to her, and my mother decided not to abort me. And the one thing that I will say, coming out of all of the trials and tribulations and abuse and everything I've been through, the one thing that I will say that I have noticed is all of those trials have turned into blessings for me now. And every single trial, I can look at every single thing I went through and find a blessing that came from it. So I think had I not gone through the 12-step programs, had I not, and I was fearful, very fearful of being insane. So on the second step, where you come to believe that a power greater than you can restore you to sanity, that was a huge one for me, because I was fearful of going insane because my mother was mentally ill. And that was one of my biggest fears. So I can say that this program really helped put a lot of things into perspective for me when it came to my higher power and how to deal with the abuse that I suffered and everything I went through. So I have to say, I think we believe in the same higher power there.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's, it's personal to us. You don't ever have to explain who your higher power is to anybody else in AA or in a 12-step program. You don't. It's personal to you.
Nope.
Nobody will tell you you have to do this and you must do that spiritually in order to make it. And I'll tell you what, the place where the kind of freedom that you described there, you know, comes true for most of us is in the making of our amends. As we go around and making our amends, in fact, the big book actually says, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, meaning the amends step, which is nine, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. That's the first promise. We'll know a new meaning and a new life and so forth. And there are a whole bunch of promises that absolutely come true. And for most people, that's where they write the realization that it's really almost miraculous how you begin to understand, oh, my God, I've been doing the work, and sure enough, this stuff is happening. You don't make it happen. It just occurs. It develops, and you suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. And that can take several years to get to that place. But please, if you're engaged in recovery and you want to use a 12-step program, stay with it long enough and do it seriously enough that you can take advantage of the many benefits that are waiting for you. When you're a little bit down the road. And it will be hard work. 12-step programs are not easy. It's hard work. It's self-examination. The next couple of steps, 4 and 5, are self-examination steps. You take personal inventory, you know, moral inventory, no less, it says. And then in step 5, you've got to share that with somebody else. That's scary. That's another reason they put steps 1, 2, and 3 before 4 and 5, because you know when 4 and 5 are coming, that's serious work. And in that serious work, you have to already have a higher power, I think, and be following the process. In other words, it's God's will that I got here, so I'm going to continue doing steps 4 and 5, and then 6 and 7 and 8 and 9, and so forth. Carol Levine, I see you there. I just hadn't a chance to open your mic yet. Welcome to the show. I don't know how much you've listened to it, but you're welcome, of course, from New Jersey.
Yeah, actually, I just tuned in, Bill, about maybe 5 minutes ago.
Okay.
My kids have been married 30 years today, so I had to take them out for dinner. 30 years.
Of course, congratulations.
Ooh. Wow.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. Dave and Chris, yes. I was listening to what you said. Yeah, 30 years is a long time, and when we're alcoholics, that's to even make it through marriage is amazing, okay? So they've made it. They're doing fine. But with the moral inventory, that's always one of the hardest things because we're always so sure, and of course we are, you know, in writing this, that, you know, so much abuse that we had gone through, so many bad things that happened, whatever the case might be, that we should say, you know, just point our fingers at the other person. Number one, it's easier. And number two, to do the moral inventory and then to have to say something to someone, you know, about, you know, what you're going through and to admit that you, too, had things that you had done wrong is a very hard thing to do.
Right. This is all about our behavior. not the other
yeah.
person. We disregard the other person altogether. And it's not that we don't hold them responsible. We do. But we're not God. They have their own God they have to answer to and their own society they have to answer to, and we want them to. But what are we, what is our role, and how do we play out, you know, our life because we're traumatized people? And what did we do that was wrong that on our behalf that needs to be made amends for? Now, I just looked at the 12 steps as I rewrote them and realized that there's only two places, as far as I can look quickly, that the word alcoholics or Alcoholics Anonymous was changed in the 12 steps in the way I do it. And that's in step one, where it says we admitted we were powerless over the abuse and trauma of our youth. And in step 12, that after having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to other still suffering adult survivors of child abuse and practice these principles in all our affairs. That's the only two places that the steps are actually verbally changed in the way I wrote them out, which amazes me. I thought there was numerous places. But, you know, all the steps, they're exactly the same steps, in other words. And we just substitute our issue instead of the word alcohol or alcoholism. What a wonderful way a person can examine themselves, get kind of clean in their life. And, you know, as they say, after making that list, sharing it with somebody else and God. And God wasn't the problem, because God knew all along as I was writing my moral inventory what was going to be on it. But it does say in step five that we admitted to God and to ourselves, no problem there, but to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. And that's the scary part, because you have to take it to, usually it's your sponsor in a 12-step program, or maybe your therapist or your minister. You take this list, this moral inventory, to God, to yourself, those are okay, but then to somebody else. And you have to say, these are all the places that I've been able to identify. And it's a long list if you do it effectively. The first time you do it, it's a huge list. Huge. And then we also know that on that list, from that list, come many of the people that we're eventually going to have to make a list that we hit harm. And then find a willingness to make amends. And then in step nine, make direct amends whenever it's possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. So there are many places where we don't make amends because you don't make amends to your abuser, for example. That would injure you. You don't do that. You don't go to your father who raped you and say, geez, Dad, I'm sorry, but it was me that stole the car that weekend. You don't do that, you know. But you do make amends in appropriate ways as much as you can. You continue to take personal inventory, and when you're wrong, stop, promptly admit it. I'm doing that tonight, frankly. And then continue to pray and meditate to improve your conscious contact with God as we understand Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. We don't even pray for knowledge of ourselves. We seek God's will and the power to carry out God's will. That's what we do. And then finally, as I said, a spiritual awakening will happen as a result of the steps. And so the 12th step is all about carrying the message to others who are still suffering and practicing the principles we've discovered in everything we do, in all our affairs. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to pause briefly enough to make sure. We haven't heard from Mary Ellen for a little while. We have 20 minutes left in the show. These shows go so fast when you get a good topic, and I figure this is a good one. but Mary Ellen, do you have any thoughts or questions you'd like to ask? Mary Ellen, we're not hearing you. Maybe you're muted.
I'm sorry, I did mute me. I wanted to say that this taking personal inventory is something, maybe I could say that's what I've been doing. I haven't known how to title it. Recently, I took high offense to somebody's description of my character, I guess. And I just had to say, I need to back out of this conversation and we'll finish it later, because my personal response was I wanted to be angry and just blurt, you know, whatever come out of my mouth. But I sat back and I thought, you know, I need to do a personal inventory of what are my characteristics, and is it something I'm doing that would make people perceive that, or is this my personal inventory, I needed to stop and just take a deep breath and step back and look at myself and make sure I was walking the right path instead
Absolutely.
Of just reacting. Yeah.
Absolutely. And like I said, the first time you do an inventory, it's often giant. If you've never done one before, it's going to be big. But again, part of the steps in step 12, 10, it says we continue to take personal inventory, and when we're wrong, we promptly admit it. So that's what I did today. I was wrong today. I was wrong last night, both. And I began the meeting by making an apology for that behavior and by explaining that I recognize that I am I'm a sick person, you know. I'm sick in the sense that I'm spiritually sick, and so are we all, and that's okay. But I am far enough along so that I should be praying all the time. Really, my sponsor taught me, before all things we pray. Before all things. Every individual action is what he meant. We pray. And I don't do that anymore. I did it for a while, and it really works, by the way. It keeps you from making a lot of mistakes. But I stop praying, and sure enough, my anger comes back. I attempt to control situations. I take exception to someone taking my inventory, for example. I get triggered by that, and a trigger usually makes me angry. So
yes.
I made amends at the beginning of the show here about having become angry and realizing I was wrong both yesterday and today. Go ahead.
Well, that's beautiful, you know, and I think that we all need to do that more often. Yes.
We really do.
Let me say something.
Kind of a constant thing. Go ahead, Carol.
Yeah. Well, when we're doing that, you know, we have to realize, number one, okay, no one's perfect. And if we've made mistakes, and of course we have, everyone makes mistakes. And then those of us who have, you know, walked through hell, if you will, you know, we tend to build that wall around us. And if someone comes at us and says, hey, you hurt my feelings, or you did this or you did that, we tend to get that fighting spirit back, at least I do, and to protect myself. And I've learned over the years to, as we used to say, take that brick wall down and allow for the other person to come in, because it might be constructive. It might be constructive criticism. We're so afraid always that someone's going to criticize us because we were too criticized as children, okay? So
sure.
I've gotten to the point in my life where I allow for people to criticize me, and then I go and I'll sit and I'll think about it. And if I think that they might be wrong, I'll say so. And if I think they're right, I'll apologize. You know, that's the way it is. And that's growth. Okay, that's growth. And that's what we're all trying to do, is to grow.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Bailey, are you still with us?
I'm here. I'm listening, taking it all in.
All right. Any questions or comments, you're welcome. Go ahead.
Well, when I get angry, you know, unfortunately, I get triggered, and my kids and I trigger each other, and that's part of what we had been through. So, you know, when I recognize it, what I do is I cry. I have a hard time with apologizing. It's something I'm working on. But when I yell at my kids, or I lose it, or they push me to that breaking point, and I'll tell them, you're pushing me. I get so triggered and I get so angry that I end up going to my room and crying, or taking a drive to the beach and crying. I feel so guilty and so bad because they had so much of that kind of behavior when their father was around that they don't need it when I'm around. So I have to work. I'm trying very hard to work on not getting angry, just walking away. And I think they are starting to work on not trying to trigger me. We have good days and good weeks, and then there are a couple of days here and there that are really bad. And sometimes, you know, I'm having a bad day, I'm in a bad mood. Who do you let it out on? The people around you. And it's vice versa, you know? So
right.
Anger is a very, but, very, very dangerous thing. But if
is.
You recognize it, if you can recognize it, which is something that I think we all who are in recovery or been through trauma have learned or are learning through their recovery to deal with it. I think that's what you guys were kind of talking, Jill, you were talking about before. Like you were angry, you said, and then is that how you started off? That you were very angry yesterday and today?
Yes.
Yeah,
I got
right.
easily angered. I wasn't angry
right.
all day. In fact, I spent
right.
I spent
right.
last night trying to think about where was I wrong when I got angry, and I repeated the behavior again today. You know, I had a terrible night, as I said at the beginning of the meeting,
right.
at the beginning of the show here today.
Well.
And,
yeah.
and yet I didn't get it. You know what I mean? So,
mm-hmm.
but it's one of the seven deadly sins, right? We had,
yeah.
we, you know, it's okay for me to look back at pride, greed, wrath, envy, lust, gluttony, and sloth. And it's about pride. That's what anger is. And it's in there. You know, I own all of that. I am capable of all seven of those deadly sins and more. And I just have to admit it. But as best I can, I try not to practice pride, greed. I don't even know what pride is. That one I have a lot of problem with. Because I don't know if I should be out front with my pride. Like I am, for example, proud of NASCA. And I'm the father of NASCA, if you want to call it that. I created it. I'm proud of
yep.
what we, I always say we, I didn't do it, we did it, but I did start it. And so I take pride in being the founder, but how much am I supposed to say, you know, I'm proud of being the founder and not sound like falsely modest? You know, I struggle with false pride, I guess it would be, or pride versus false pride versus modesty versus, you know what I mean? I just don't know. What is humility? I don't know what humility is. I'm way far away from knowing what humility is. But I try to control sometimes what I say because I don't want to sound too prideful, even though I'm not trying to come from a prideful place. I'm careful, maybe over careful. Maybe I'm wrong on that end of the spectrum. Because, you know, having been the founder of NASCA is something to be proud of, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I didn't do it. I launched it, but all of us, I always say this, I stress it, it's our effort. It's our nonprofit, our website, our show, our. Because this is a we thing. It's a communal thing. We are the NASCA family. All of us matter, and all of us contribute to whatever NASCA has become. And will continue to be. And, of course, it's my, let's say it's my pride that makes me believe that we've crossed a threshold where I believe NASCA will outlive Bill, which was one of my original goals. And I'm proud about that. I think it doesn't need me anymore. I could retire today. And although it would be hard because there's certain jobs that I don't have anybody to replace me. But I'm constantly looking for that. I want to be replaced in everything I do. Okay? I'm sorry, somebody was trying to say something?
You're irreplaceable.
No, I'm not. No, I'm not. No.
Don't tell him that. He'll get a big head.
I'm not replaceable.
I've known you 11 years.
11 years it's been now. Go ahead.
Wow, it's amazing. I wish those words that you just said now, everybody would think that way. Our world would be such a better place.
Well, you know, there's nothing wrong, Bill, with being proud of the fact.
Well,
and I always believe that God leads us, okay? Like in your case, I believe that God led you to become the founder of NASCA. And I've been on this for 11 years now. And there's nothing wrong with, you know, feeling pride in seeing the accomplishments of other, you know, people and watching them grow and feeling good
about that.
And being proud of yourself too. Hey, listen, you've come a long ways. Okay, so
I know.
You know,
but
there's nothing wrong with that.
Simply, I hear people praise me regularly, and I'm not being boastful about this. They simply do. They say, "I'm so grateful to you for doing blah blah blah," and I have had to learn how to simply say, "Thank you." That's it.
That's all you have to say.
But I didn't have to. I used to have to say, "Well, it's not me. It's all of us together. It's blah, 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 blah." I just have to go in this whole diatribe to explain the fact that I am grateful for that acknowledgement and say thank you. All you have to say in a situation like that is you're welcome. Pass it on. That's it. That's it. So that's not false pride. But I am capable of pride in the bad sense of the word over and over and over and over again. I suffer from it. And I accept that about Bill. But I also make amends when I'm wrong, especially when I'm trying to control something and I'm triggered by the fact that I realize I'm not in control and it comes out as anger. That's how it usually expresses itself.
If I can interject. Bill.
Yes, we got 7 minutes left.
It's
I just wanted to warn you.
Yeah,
7 minutes.
Very quickly. I think that we as human beings, we have what we call the human condition. And the human condition is where we have a tendency to automatically react from human emotion, that being anger, sadness, fearfulness, whatever those human emotions are. I think one thing that the 12-step program helped teach me was being able to transcend. And I still work on it, better at it. It helps me to transcend from my human nature to my spiritual nature. So if somebody angers me, like on my threads, I always allow everybody to speak, whether they agree with me or disagree with me or not, and because I feel it's important for everybody to have a voice. Okay, and other people may argue on there or whatever, but I'm not going to because I'm going to sit back and listen and learn from other people. And I think that sometimes, and I fall into this category as well, but we have a tendency sometimes if something triggers us really bad to automatically react from our human nature, then stopping for a minute and think about, How should I act from a spiritual nature, from my spiritual nature? What would be a better way to react to this? Just take that second that it takes to step back and think, how would we do that? And I have found that actually taking the time to do that results in a better conversation, in a better result from just that automatic reaction we have being human, from our human nature, our human anger, our human this or that. Because then we eventually have to apologize when we do realize maybe we were wrong. So I just want people to just put that little nugget in their head for a second and just remember, take a time before you react. Before you react from your human nature, how would be a better way to react from your spiritual nature? So that was just my 2 cents worth.
It's difficult for certain people. For one reason,
we were caught.
Okay, if I can just, we were taught, as Catholics, for example, we were taught that we were guilty in thought, word, and deed. Sinful in thought, word, and deed. Wow, that's pretty hard to avoid. I can't do it. I don't know if you guys can, but I can't. So I got to be way more gentle. I got to have a higher power that's way more gentle than that. Come on. That's really not reasonable. So my higher power is...
It's interesting that you mentioned that word indeed, Bill. It's interesting that you mentioned that word indeed, because every single day I pray to my higher power, please, the center of, and guide and bless my every thought, word, and deed today and every day of my life. That's how you pray. That's how I pray.
That's right. That's right. That's right. No, very good. And we all have different ways of expressing our spiritual beliefs. That's absolutely okay, especially as related to a 12-step program. You are not required to follow any particular spiritual path, but you can follow any as long as you're willing to believe you're not God. And that the God you're with, and I hope it's a God that you're comfortable with, because I don't want to, like I said, I cannot, you know, we were beaten down, screamed at, given rules.
Right.
Our whole lives as children, it really damaged us. I want a God that's gentle with me, that's understanding, forgiving, and as I say, even forgiving to the point where before I even think of asking for forgiveness, I have it. In the moment before I ask for it, it's there. That, you know, that kind of thing. So, again, that's just my personal belief. We had a great show tonight. With 3 minutes left, I will give everybody an opportunity to briefly say whatever they'd like to about tonight's show. You guys are on the list. It goes Carol, Bailey, Kathy, Mary Ellen. So I'll go in that order. Carol, 30 seconds.
Okay. I just want to say that, yes, we are flawed. We are flawed people. However, we are also good people. We can be good. And by being good, that builds us up as a better person. And it emanates right out of us. We're able to help people. So, you know, I'm never sorry to say that I'm an alcoholic. I'll be the first one to tell you that. And I'm proud of myself that I haven't had a drink since 1980 or 81.
Wow.
I'm starting to forget. And
Wow.
It was all in front of me
today,
all around me today. But did I drink? No, I did not, and I don't have to anymore. Thank God for that. That's all I had to say.
Amazing.
We're grateful too, Carol. God bless you.
Thank you.
Bailey.
Well, I'm going to say,
seconds,
I'm not going to talk. I'm not going to talk a lot. I'm just going to say I'm thankful for all of you guys and for being a part of the NASCA family. I am. Feel blessed. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Bailey. And by the way, if you want to have further, you want to delve into this a little further, I did add our 12-step series of shows. Somebody is coming through. Our 12-step series of shows to the pull-down menus. It's the last link in the last pull-down menu, right under the 12 traditions. It says our 12-step radio shows, because at one point, Rivka Ettery, who wrote a book on this, using the 12 steps to recover from child abuse, was my partner, and we did three times through each step. I have put them on a single page, so they're easy to find, and you can use them as a reference to how to do 12-step work in relation to recovering from child abuse and its trauma. All right, as quickly as possible, Kathy, and then Mary Ellen.
I cede my time over to Mary Ellen since I interrupted you earlier. Go ahead, Mary Ellen.
Oh, that's sweet. Thank you, Mary Ellen.
Yes. I just wanted to say I thought this has been very helpful, and it reminded me of the emotional wheel. I don't know if you guys have seen that in a while. You're probably way beyond it. But how sometimes we think of one of our emotions as predominant, when really it's being pushed by something else, like fear might cause anger or that type of a reaction.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's absolutely true. The big book says that self-centered fear is the root of our problems. So fear and resentment is what it comes down to. I got to deal with those, both of those, all the time, even though I've been in recovery a long time, and I'm sure Carol would agree, Kathy would agree, and so forth. Let me say that I'm very grateful to all of you having been here this evening. Again, I apologize for the anger that I displayed earlier today. I'm going to try as best I can to not do that tomorrow. That's all I can do. This is Bill Murray in Pompano Beach, Florida, saying God bless you and the children of the world, and God bless adult survivors of child abuse.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was gone. You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Blog Talk Radio.